Welcome into the RaiderBlog.com podcast. I'm your host, Taylor Armacino. On the Skype line today is Bleacher Report AFC West's blog lead writer, Chris Hansen. And Chris, you're not alone today, are you?
No, I got my daughter here with me today.
What's her name?
And my daughter's name's Claire. She's sitting here playing with my phone. She's just turned a year, so it's been fun.
That's great. So if you hear anybody chiming in, it's her. A lot on tap this week. First thing we're going to start with is the Super Bowl, which was this weekend. I was very happy to see the 49ers go down to the Ravens. It was really an interesting game, actually. It was looking like it was going to be a blowout in the first half and early in the third quarter, and then really unprecedentedly the lights went out, which really has never happened in a Super Bowl before, ever. And I'm not a huge believer in momentum, but I think in that game, the lights going out did change the course of the game. Baltimore came out a lot flatter than they were before that. San Francisco was kind of rejuvenated by that little break they had. And it looked for a while there like San Francisco was going to run away with the game. But late in the game, they weren't able to punch it in. With some questionable non-calls going on those last couple plays. And Baltimore ended up being the champions and sending Ray Lewis off with a Super Bowl ring. So, Chris, what did you think of the game?
You know, it's one of those interesting things about this game because I thought it was entertaining, and then I thought, well, you know, now it's going to be a stinker, and then obviously it came back and was good again. But that's actually part of what makes the NFL great is games tend to go that way, and not just the Super Bowl, but you know, games in general, even when teams tend to get up to big leads, just by law of averages, the other team starts to get back in it because, you know, play calling changes, defenders start thinking differently, you know, teams start to regress in terms of converting third downs, and all these different things happen, and games tend to get closer. So, you can kind of guess maybe that happens a lot more than just the Super Bowl, but I was glad to see that it got close at the end. Glad to see that the NFL didn't call a holding there at the end of the game because I'm so tired of these referees basically deciding the game and not players. And I think maybe that was holding at the end there. But, you know, was a good physical play. I like to see that kind of play. I like to see those things play out. And honestly, I think the 49ers had plenty of chance to win the game otherwise. So, you know, that overall I thought it was a good Super Bowl. One of the better ones, and hopefully we have more like that in the future. You know, you hate to see duds.
Well, yeah, one thing I thought was really interesting was that we kind of underestimated, I guess. I mean, you and I both picked Baltimore to win, so we weren't surprised they won. But I was kind of surprised with how unprepared the Niners seemed to be, or how unprepared is not the right word. It's kind of taken back by the moment they were in terms of they really lost their composure a couple times really badly. I think the biggest part being on their biggest example of this being on that third down on that last possession when they called the timeout and Kaepernick didn't get that play off. And if you looked at what they were doing, they were going to run a quarterback counter with some linemen coming around. That play was wide open. And the fact that they couldn't get the play off might have cost them the Super Bowl because I think they walked that ball into the end zone. I mean, that play looked so wide open.
Yeah, and that's... that's one of those things was that I think young quarterback or younger team or whatever you can pin it on. But I think that those errors that the 49ers made, just as you said, may have ended up costing the 49ers at times. And there was other examples, too, where, you know, he was late to get the ball off or you know, the 49ers weren't quite ready for the play. And there was also some interesting play calls as far as the defensive play calls, I think, are one thing that people don't realize. But the 49ers had some interesting ones in that they basically continued to play aggressive even when they weren't getting to Flacco and Flacco was abusing their safeties. And they continued to do that up until like really the fourth quarter. And so there was a lot of interesting things that the 49ers did that I think probably ended up costing them a game. But I think when it comes down to it, they just got outplayed.
Yeah, I think so too. I think they got outcoached. I mean, going back to that last sequence, after they called the timeout on third down, they almost didn't get the fourth down playoff. and they would have been better served to call a timeout, because I thought, you know, once they got that, once they had to use that second timeout, the chances of them getting the ball back with anything, with any time on the clock for them to do anything was slim, which is what happened. They had to return the punt with 3 seconds left. Once you call that second timeout, it's almost, there's no point in having that last timeout, because you're not going to get the ball back with ample time. And on that fourth down play, they barely got it off, and the Ravens blitzed, and you saw what happened. Kaepernick threw it right out of bounds, and there was the holding or the non-holding. But I thought that was total clock mismanagement by Jim Harbaugh, and it's kind of surprising not that many people have talked about it. I think if it was like Andy Reid, they would have been harping on that for weeks about how Andy Reid can't
call back-to-back timeouts, so that's probably why they didn't.
Oh, well, that makes sense. Well, no, it was the next play, though.
Yeah, well, oh, yeah, after they run a play, they can. But, I mean, you know, they can't. I think, overall, when you look at, even on that final play, when it was the so-called holding or whatever, what you're saying still goes to be true. And I think some of it was coaching and some of it was just the players. Because if you look at Kaepernick, he got a lot of, you got instant pressure on that play, and that's why he went to his hot read, kind of threw it up, was hoping for a holding call. But basically speaking, he was instant pressure was on him because of the pre-snap read, and the 49ers didn't have it blocked. And you know, preferably in that situation, you would like to have the quarterback get you into a play where you're not, you know, hoping for a holding call or throwing it up on a 50-50 ball in that situation. Preferably you want something, you know, higher percentage that's going to take advantage of that blitz. And Kaepernick instead didn't see the blitz pre-snap, didn't read that pre-snap, only saw it, you know, after it was basically already on top of him, and his only hope was the hot read there, and it didn't work out for him. You know, things could have gone differently, and I honestly don't really care who won the Super Bowl, but I thought what the Ravens had been able to do to that point was just amazing, and I think they showed it against the 49ers. They were playing amazing football, and they won, and I think Flacco was a big reason for that. I honestly didn't expect to be saying that. Overall, though, good Super Bowl.
Yeah, I thought it was an entertaining Super Bowl, and it would have been very interesting, I think, if the Ravens had gone on to lose that game, what that narrative would have been after that, given that they were dominating before the lights went out. I mean, if it was the Raiders in the Super Bowl and they were up 28 points or whatever it was, and then the lights went out and they lost momentum and ended up losing the game, I would have been livid.
Yeah, I mean, I think, and I think in addition to that, you saw that John Harbaugh was really pissed off, and what it turns out what he was pissed off about was the fact that the 49ers communications hadn't come back up. And they were asking him to continue the game without a communications, and his coordinators were in the booth.
Right.
The 49ers are on the sideline, and I think that's a big deal, because you can't hand signal, you can't relay the plays. It's a disadvantage having to do that, and it's also a disadvantage even if they had come down to the field as they were going to try to do. That's still a disadvantage because you're used to calling from a different point of view. You're used to calling from the sky box there. And if you're not able to do that, that changes the game. That changes what you can see, the way you coach, the way you call plays. That would have been a huge disadvantage for the Ravens. And if that would have happened, that would have been a disaster. And so there's a lot of what-ifs you can play there. And I think that I credit 49ers for really getting back into the game. I thought they would, at least a little bit in the game. But, you know, I credit them for fighting back, because you know, the Raiders didn't fight back when they got blown out in 2002. They just got blown out all the way through the game. And one of those things where, you know, at least if the Raiders had battled back, you don't believe in moral victories, but you do in the sense that you battled back, you're a good team, you'll be back next year. It's one of those things where you build confidence. But, you know, if they had gotten blown out for the rest of the game, who knows how they would have rebounded from that next year.
Right, I agree, and I think that will be a good confidence booster going into next year, you know, on the top of the fact that, unlike a lot of other teams, when you see them go from not being very good to very good, then they regress a little bit. The Niners took another step forward, and so I think that's another good sign for them moving forward.
Yeah, I agree. So I think that overall kind of starts us into the offseason officially. And I know that we were going to talk a little bit about the Raiders offseason. season and their plans and how they're going to rebound. So I think we can kind of safely transition there to kind of maybe some ways that the Raiders can improve the roster. What were your thoughts on that?
Yeah, and you wrote about it this week, right? You wrote about it for Bleacher Report. The article was, I think it was, what, five quick ways to turn around the Raiders?
Yeah, the title was a five ways to turn around the league's worst roster. And I use those terms because Evan Silva at RotoWorld.com kind of did his roster breakdown earlier this week, and he said that the Raiders had the worst roster in the league. And
which so I would agree with that.
Yeah, I would agree with that. He kind of broke down each one. And to be honest with you, it's tough to argue. I mean, you might be able to look at the Jaguars and say the Jaguars have a worse one roster. But other than that, it's tough to argue because even the Chiefs have some nice players, had some issues at quarterback, certainly. But if you look from top to bottom, offensively, defensively, you know, the Raiders roster is pretty sad.
Yeah, I mean, the Chiefs were picked to win the AFC West by a lot of people before the year. I mean, they have a really talented team. Like, that was a disastrous year for them. It wasn't like... It was kind of like the Raiders, where it was, oh, they're rebuilding. I mean, Kansas City was kind of primed up and geared ready to go to win the division this year, and they just had a really bad year.
Right, yeah, exactly. So, I mean, the Raiders, it was understandable. You lose your two starting veteran cornerbacks. And once that happened, you know, that was really a tough thing for the defense. And then you also have, you know, the offensive scheme and all that. We've talked about it time and time again about just how the Raiders, you know, kind of mishandled a little bit last year and the challenges that they have and the challenges they'll continue to go through. But I was thinking about it. I was like, you know, this is the worst roster. But, you know, the Colts probably had the worst roster going in last year.
Mm-hmm.
And they made the playoffs at 11-5. How did they do that? Andrew Luck certainly helped. But there was a lot of different things that they went through. So I kind of went through a little bit about how the Raiders could go about improving this roster and how quickly they can improve upon this roster in one offseason if they do things right and get a little lucky. So that's kind of was the premise I was going on. And then I went into several different ways that the Raiders could improve.
I think she agrees with us that the Raiders have the worst roster in the league.
Yeah, I think she does. She's sitting here. I don't even know what she's looking at. Let's see. I'm going to look at. She has done a Twitter search, something that requires her to use my location. So I don't really know what she's doing here, but she's having fun, that's for sure.
Anyway, so we go back to your article. The first thing you wrote about was that they need to get a franchise quarterback, which I would agree with. Is Carson Palmer that guy for you? I'm not sure he is for me at this point. I think, you know, going back to what the Colts did, the fact that they got rid of Peyton Manning, I think, makes Carson Palmer pretty expendable if there's a franchise guy out there that can replace him. And that's really the big question, you know, if it's going to be Geno Smith or another quarterback in the draft. Do they think that they can find another guy other than Palmer to lead them in the future?
Yeah, and I think what you have to look at on Palmer is, what is a franchise quarterback these days? Because Carson Palmer is not young anymore. He's, at this stage of his career, he's not a franchise quarterback. He's a bridge the gap type of quarterback. He's a guy who teams bring in between, you know, they don't want to have a horrible starter. They bring him in to bridge the gap between when they can find their next franchise guy. That's who he is. And that's who a lot of quarterbacks are. I mean, that's really who Alex Smith would be, if whoever picks him up. I mean, these are bridge the gap type of guys. These aren't your franchise guy. They're your bridge the gap guys. And that's who Carson Palmer is. And that's who he'll continue to be for the rest of his career because he's not on his original team. You know, the scheme doesn't necessarily fit him. Do I think he could have a couple good years left in him? Absolutely, I do. But how good of years is he going to have? I think we've seen who Carson Palmer is, especially later in his career. And so I don't think he's that guy either. And I don't think when you say find a franchise quarterback, it's not, you know, hey, Carson Palmer, we found you, we already have you, let's just make you better. You know, he is what he is. I mean, let's be real, that's who he is. Now, what we've seen, that's who Carson Palmer is. And it didn't really help the Raiders that much last year.
Yeah, absolutely. The next thing you had on your list was you got to find pass rushers or a pass rusher, a dominant guy. And that definitely is something the Raiders do not have right now.
Yeah, I mean, pass rush, here's the thing. This is a quarterback for the league now, right? If you have a great quarterback, you're going to do great things, regardless of, you know, maybe the relative weakness of the team or the defense or other things. You're going to be able to do some nice things if you've got that franchise guy. And how do you counter those guys as a pass rush? I mean, that's the number one thing that you need to counter a good quarterback is pass rush, because, you know, not many quarterbacks are better when they're rushed. That's pretty rare. Most of these quarterbacks are worse when they're rushed, and so you got to find a pass rush. You have to get after them. You get after Tom Brady or Peyton Manning, they're good about getting the ball out, but you can still get after these guys, you know, especially if you can do natural 4- or 5-man pressure. Then they have a little more trouble getting the ball to the receivers because, you know, that pressure's coming more quickly. And so finding that pass rusher, especially that elite guy if you can, is huge. And it's just a huge lift to the defense if you can find that pass rusher. It helps the secondary and it helps your team overall. So pass rusher, huge way that the Raiders can improve. You can find if the Raiders could find a franchise quarterback and an elite pass rusher in the same year, they'd be in good shape.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think you don't have to look any further than the recent Super Bowls to see, you know, the Ravens have Terrell Suggs. You look at the Patriots and the Giants, 2 times they played in the Super Bowl. It's been the Giants' dominant defensive line, dominant pass rush that's really thrown what is one of the best passing offenses in the history of the league, the Patriots, and their spread offense. They've thrown them completely out of whack. The year before that, the Packers had Clay Matthews. So, I mean, absolutely, one of the bigger trends we've seen is that as this league goes to more and more of a spread passing game, you have to be able to throw these offenses out of rhythm, and the easiest way to do that is to hit the quarterback.
Yeah, you just haven't seen these. It's not like the storyline headed into these Super Bowls has been, look at this team, they've got no pass rush, but they have a great secondary, and that keeps their defense in the game. No, that's not been the storyline at all. You've got great pass rush. You might have good secondary too, but you have a great pass rush, and that's really what these teams need to be successful. And you can get away with some lesser corners and safeties if you can do that. And it did come back to hurt the 49ers a little bit because they basically subscribed to that theory where they have some lesser corners and safeties, and it came back to bite them this year in the Super Bowl. But the point is that, yeah, you can get a long way without elite corners and safeties.
Yeah, absolutely. Your third point, and this is the one I would disagree with you a little bit on, is you had him build around Darren McFadden. And not that building around him is necessarily a bad thing, but I think with McFadden specifically, you have to keep your reservations just because you can't rely on him to stay healthy because he hasn't done it.
Yeah, and I kind of put that in there in my article. I said this is a kind of a catch-22 situation with Darren McFadden because there's two problems with Darren McFadden and building around Darren McFadden. One is he's injury prone. You build around him, and then he's out of the lineup, and then where are you? What are you left with? But the other is he's in a contract year, and the Raiders may not end up keeping him around. And so you don't want to put too many resources into building around Darren McFadden if he's not going to be here for the long haul. You know, if you build a strong run-blocking offensive line, and then you end up letting McFadden go, what are you really there for, especially if that's not quite the same? They're not quite as good pass blockers as they are run blockers. So you have to obviously hedge your bets a little bit, but if the Raiders want to be competitive offensively with what they have, with, you know, at the current moment, you know, it's going to take a few years to build up the offense and defense, and if they want to be competitive, they need to rely on Darren McFadden. They've got really pretty much no choice but to do so. So yeah, there's some reservations there, and you don't want to drain your resources, but build around Darren McFadden also means scheme-wise, making sure the scheme fits him, making sure the offense works off of him when he's in there, and making sure that he's productive. So there's a lot of things that you can do without having to devote too many resources. And I think McNabb's firing and going back to the man-blocking scheme is really evidence that the Raiders are going to do that.
Right, and I think we would both agree that it may not be necessarily built around McFadden, but you have to supplant your quarterback, or your young quarterback at least, with a running game. And I think we've seen that. I mean, you can look at almost all the young quarterbacks in the league. RG3, he had Alfred Morris, and they had obviously a very good running game. Russell Wilson had Marshawn Lynch, and that's a very good running game. Colin Kaepernick had the 49ers running game. I mean, you know, as much as these young quarterbacks still are being relied on to make plays and throw the ball, you have to be able to supplant them with a running game, or else it's going to be a disaster.
Yeah, exactly. The running game is an important tool for any quarterback. because it gives you another tool in your arsenal, another weapon, which is play action. And the threat of the run also keeps defensive ends from, you know, bailing out and rushing the pass for every play. There are a lot of different little things that a good running game, even a productive running game, will help for an offense, and that's young quarterbacks and veteran quarterbacks. And so building around McFadden, making sure he's productive, is going to help the Raiders, regardless of whether the running game has become secondary in the NFL or not.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you look at a team like Baltimore. They have Ray Rice, but they're not a great running game. But it's the fact that they can run the ball and the threat that they can run the ball. And if they consistently get him touches, their offense just functions better because they don't turn into a one-dimensional passing game where you just have Flacco dropping back and dropping back and dropping back. So you don't need to necessarily be the Joe Gibbs Redskins running the ball, but you have to have at least the impending threat to the opposing defense that you can run the ball.
Yeah, it's funny to bring up Ray Rice because the other thing you notice, and McFadden is this guy too, is when I say build around Darren McFadden, it's not entirely the running game, although we are talking a lot about the running game as a running back, but build around Darren McFadden, he's a great receiver out of the backfield, just like Ray Rice is, and that's an additional threat that you have. So when you're talking about building around a running back, it's getting him enough touches to be productive. He's the most explosive player offensively that the team has. You need to make sure that you get the ball into his hands, and that could be running or in the passing game. But one way or the other, you need to make sure he's going to be productive with those touches and make sure the offense is built around him in terms of getting his touches and being productive with those touches. And if the Raiders can do that, and they can do that relatively simply, minor tweaks on the offensive line and, you know, changing the scheme, and then that's going to really help the Raiders. So I think Darren McFadden, regardless of what you think about him, he's going to really be a key for the Raiders this season in terms of what they're able to do on the offensive side of the ball.
No, absolutely. Your fourth way to turn the Raiders around would be to get a reliable number one receiver, which I completely agree with. I mean, again, you look at the teams in the Super Bowl this year, Anquan Boldin, Michael Crabtree. Doesn't have to be Calvin Johnson or Jerry Rice, but you have reliable number one receivers. When you look at the Raiders, it's almost like they have a bunch of twos and threes, but I don't think there's really a great number one guy that you can for sure go to on a third down or go to when you need a big play. I don't think that guy is there right now.
Yeah, he's definitely not there. And DHB, I've defended DHB in the past, and I still like his work ethic, and I think he's really come a long way. But at the same time, he's a guy that, you know, really should be a number two or number three option in an offense. That's really who he should be, and that's how Hugh Jackson used him. And then you look at a guy like Denarius Moore, good deep threat, but not quite reliable enough to be the guy that goes over the middle, the guy that's got reliable enough hands that you can go to him consistently. And you saw a lot of those problems pop up this year. So reliable number one wide receiver, and the way I really quantify that, this has got to be a guy, he's got to be a 1,000-yard guy every year, good consistent hands, doesn't drop too many passes. This is a guy you can rely on third down. He's the go-to guy in tough situations. He knows how to get open. And to be honest with you, I think one of the most interesting guys to fill that role for the Raiders this year is not a draft pick necessarily, but I think it's a free agent. And I think the Raiders will have enough to go out and get maybe one free agent to help them out that's not already on their, you know, that was not already on their team last year. And I think that guy that is going to be the most interesting is a guy like Greg Jennings. And I think that's where the Raiders might try to go out and get a guy that isn't going to break the bank necessarily. And I don't personally believe Jennings is going to break the bank. But he's the number one receiver that's going to be reliable. And each and every time you add another quality player, you know, the quality players that you do have, they maybe just, if you use a baseball analogy, it's like when you lose your closer, your whole bullpen suffers because you have to bump everybody up one. Well, in the NFL, it's not that quite differently at a wide receiver position where you usually go three and four deep. You bump everybody down, their roles change, they get better because they're only being asked to do what they're good at. And so I think the Raiders really could use that number one wide receiver, and a guy like Jennings who might not break the bank is a good option for them.
No, I couldn't agree more with you. Your fifth way to turn it around would be to get some reliable cornerbacks. And that definitely was lacking last year. You had everybody got injured, and the guys you put in, the guys the Raiders put in, they got injured, and it was just a total disaster at the quarterback position last year.
Yeah, I mean, Claire obviously has something to say about that one, but she is going to interrupt us a little bit here and there. Sorry about that. But I think with cornerbacks, and as I mentioned earlier, the pass rush is definitely the most important. And Claire agrees.
Yeah, she doesn't like the Raider cornerbacks either.
Yeah, so she definitely agrees with the fact that the Raiders need cornerbacks. But as I mentioned earlier, pass rush is definitely going to be more important than cornerbacks. But you definitely need good enough players to play there that are reliable. And I think the Raiders, part of the reason they ended up with Michael Huff there is because they could at least trust what he was going to be able to do there as opposed to what they ended up getting. Part of the reason that I think they signed Shante Spencer and Ron Bartel is because these are veterans that they could, whether they were good or not, they could rely on their level of play. And there's something about being able to rely on the level of play of cornerbacks that's helpful. You know what to expect of them in certain situations. You know what they're going to be able to do and not able to do. The young players, it's a little bit more of a trial and error situation, and you end up getting burned more and you don't know what situations they can handle. And so the Raiders are in a tough situation because they need to find two or three cornerbacks. And just being able to do that is going to be tough because they're always in high demand. So I think that it's going to be hard for the Raiders to accomplish that last one, to corral a couple. I mean, they're going to bring in some bodies, but to find two reliable cornerbacks is not going to be easy. Last year they tried and failed. They might have to try a similar tactic this year. They might draft one too, but, you know, their tactics, no matter what they are, their tactics, you know, need to be, they need to bring in bodies and they need to hope for the best in terms of what guys they bring in being successful. So this is one of the ones that would be the hardest for them to accomplish, but will really go a long way in helping overall defense.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at Baltimore, Baltimore doesn't have a bunch of lockdown Pro Bowl corners. You look at San Francisco, yeah, Carlos Rogers was, but before Carlos Rogers got to San Francisco, he was pretty much a bust. Like, you can go get corners that can play your scheme, and as long as they're reliable and they do their jobs, you're going to have a pretty good defense as long as you can rush the passer and get after the passer in your front seven. And with Bartel and Spencer, I liked that strategy with them, with the cornerbacks, instead of Al always going out and overpaying for guys that were probably below average, like a Stanford route. I like that, you know, kind of thinking, but the problem was when those guys got hurt, they had absolutely nothing behind them, and that's when the Raiders got in trouble.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I think that what it ends up coming down to is, can you get those reliable guys in there that you know what to expect from them? You know, it's not necessarily having great lockdown corners, although that helps, but you can get away with not, as you saw with the two Super Bowl teams, they both got away with not having the best corners, and it worked out for them. So overall, Raiders need to find some reliable guys, and that with the pass rush will really help them survive.
Yeah, and I think one of the nice things about Tarver being there as opposed to having Al Davis kind of run the defense is the Raiders don't necessarily need to get a bunch of lockdown man corners because they're not going to be playing, you know, man across every single down like they were before. You know, now with this modernized Jason Tarver-style defense and what we think he'll be like, you know, with healthy players, is we'll see probably more zone defenses, more zone blitzes, those kind of things. So it's not – they're not exactly putting all these guys on islands and asking them, hey, go lock this guy down. You're going to have a safety over the top, but you don't really have any help. It's going to be you just need guys who can get there and do their jobs.
Yeah, that's kind of the whole point when zone coverage in the NFL was developed was – hey, we can't cover this guy man to man. He's too good. Let's cover zones and close on the football. And it's part of Dennis Allen's philosophy as well. Part of playing zone coverage is sort of like a bend, don't break. You'll have the deep safety. You'll give up short completion, but you're not going to give up a lot of touchdowns. And that's kind of what the Raiders hope to be. They gave up way too many touchdowns last year. But if they can, giving up yards is not a big deal in the NFL. As you can see, yards can be meaningless. I mean, Carson Palmer threw for 4,000. It didn't matter because the Raiders still stunk. And he did all that, you know, in garbage time. And look at the Ravens. They gave up all kinds of yards this year, but they were one of the best red zone defenses. And so you look at all these different factors, the way that the NFL is trending, and you realize that that really it comes down to the schemes, but it also comes down to having a player that can be reliable in that scheme, and that's what the Raiders are missing.
Right, and I mean, you saw it time and time again. There weren't a whole lot of low-scoring games in the playoffs this year. Everything was kind of a high-scoring game, but you saw the differences made in the teams that didn't give up huge plays or a high number of huge plays, and teams like Baltimore that in the red zone, like against San Francisco, didn't let the Niners get in the end zone. And I think that's the evolution of NFL defense now, is that if you can hold a team to 26 points on field goals and not let them get a touchdown every possession, then you're going to be pretty decent on defense and good enough to win, as long as you can put up points on offense. I think that's kind of the way the game's evolving now.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely favors the offense now, and you have to have a good offense. And as bad as the Raiders' defense has been, you can't totally ignore the offense, because the offense wasn't able to really put up points last year either. The Raiders have two problems, and the special teams is another thing. So when you look at all of those things combined, the Raiders cannot ignore totally the offense. They have to be able to go after players on offense if they feel like they're really going to help. And that includes a number one wide receiver. And if you look at these teams with good receivers, I mean, good receivers, good quarterbacks, and you see that they're able to put up some points, and the Raiders need to be able to do that. And so what are they going to have to go for? They're going to have to figure out how do they fix their offense and while working on their defense.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, if you look at a team like the Colts, while they were a little better on defense, still were not a very good defense at all. And so, if you watched them win, it was... Right.
Yeah, exactly.
And it was Andrew Luck in the fourth quarter of these games and their offense taking over. I mean, I don't have their schedule in front of me, but it seemed like they were winning a 37-33 game every week, you know. It wasn't they were locking teams down, but they were just scoring a ton of points, and that's how they were able to make it to the playoffs. So I think I really agree with you in that the Raiders have to take care of their offense, take care of their quarterback situation, get that squared away, not first, but make that more of a priority in the short term than the defense, because I think that adage of, you know, defense wins championships, defense, I think that's a dying thing in the NFL nowadays. You really have to be good on offense to be good.
Yeah, I mean, being good on defense obviously helps, but define what is good on defense. A lot of people consider defense like locking down, not letting anybody get yards. Well, that's not really what it's all about anymore. The offense is dictating to these defenses, you know, hey, let's just keep these guys out of the end zone, force their kicker to hit field goals, and then where our offense is good, we're going to go down and score on you. If you can do those things, you're going to be successful, and that's exactly what the Ravens did, and that's really exactly who the 49ers were as well. And what you see is these teams doing that very thing. And so there is an evolution involved here. And what really is a good defense? And defense with a championship, well, I think you need to have a good defense. But what kind of defense is good these days? And really the best defenses, although people hate the catchphrase, but then don't break. You know, don't break. Don't break down to these offenses, because these offenses are so good, you have no choice but to bend. But you still have the option not to break, and I think that's where NFL defenses are really going. And they try to force turnovers, try to keep them out of the end zone. And if you can do those things, you're going to be successful.
Yeah, and I think one last thing about this is you think about the Giants 2 years ago. They were, I believe, the 30th-ranked defense in the league in the regular season. I mean, they were really bad defensively. But when you looked at what they had a really good pass rush, which kind of goes to the not only the performance of your defense, but you have to have, when you get to the postseason, the hallmarks of a team that can win in the postseason, you know, with the pass rushers and the cornerbacks that at least do their jobs. I mean, that's kind of what the Giants had a couple years ago, because, you know, they snuck into the playoffs at 9-7, and I remember that Monday night game against the New Orleans Saints. And the Saints, I think, put up 49 or something on that. Like, the Saints went down the field time and time again. The Giants had no idea what they were doing. That wasn't a great team defensively. It was a really bad team defensively. But once you got into the playoffs and Eli Manning was on a roll and they had pass rushers on defense and they were able to, you know, kind of get their act together, it really kind of authenticated what we're talking about, that you have to have your corners that do their job, and if you can get a dominant pass rush going in the postseason, and if your offense gets going, you can win a Super Bowl.
Exactly. I mean, that's exactly what you're looking at, the way that these teams in the NFL is going. And so the Raiders aren't going to be any different in the way that they, you know, mold and shape their team. And if you look at the Packers and the way that they built their team in the recent years, and you look at these other teams, and the league also mimics other teams. So, they're going to do those things that the other teams are doing to make sure that they are being successful. On the other hand, it also creates an opportunity a little bit to maybe take advantage of some inefficiencies in the market. You know, the Patriots realized how valuable tight ends could be, and then we got tight ends, and now everybody wants a tight end. And now tight ends are becoming a little bit overvalued based on their actual impact on the game. While, you know, some positions, some types of position players, I think linebacker safeties that really accomplish a lot of things are being undervalued. And those are the things where Raiders might try to exploit that, go out and get players that, that they can get a little bit cheaper that will have a bigger impact on the game.
Yeah, absolutely. And so we've talked about what the Raiders kind of need and what they could use, but, you know, knowing what you need and getting what you need are two completely different things. And so we don't really know exactly what's going to happen in free agency. There hasn't been a ton of free agency buzz yet just because this postseason started, and neither of us have access to Reggie McKenzie, so we don't know exactly what the Raiders are thinking. But we do know that the draft's coming up. And the Raiders don't have as many picks as we'd like them to have, thanks to some trades that have not really worked out. The Carson Palmer trade and the Aaron Curry trade. The Raiders are a bit short on picks. So you wrote an article today about possibilities for the Raiders trading down in the draft.
Yeah, I did.
So do you want to go into that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, basically what I went into today was everybody was asking me, hey, the Raiders... And everybody says that anytime you talk about the draft, everybody's like, well, the Raiders need to trade down and get more picks. Raiders need to trade down and get more picks. And it's like a broken record that people say, hey, the Raiders need to trade down and get more picks. And while I'm not necessarily subscribed to this theory, what I wanted to look at was, and a lot of people didn't realize, was is it realistic for the Raiders to trade from the number three pick down? And if so, how far can they trade down? And if so, what teams are likely to move up to the number three spot to draft, and what would they want there? So what I started doing is I did a little research, and I went back and looked through 2001, really, about trades in the top three of the draft. And what I found was is almost every time, up until actually last year, in 2012, every trade in the top three was a quarterback. So if the Raiders are going to trade out of the top three, chances are somebody's going to trade up for a quarterback, which means the Raiders would be passing on that same quarterback, which is also a little bit interesting because we talk about a team that could use a quarterback passing on one. There's certainly some different things that you can go into about what a quarterback be worth it, or would a quarterback worth it this year, or whether you draft a quarterback when your rest of your team is in disrepair, or all those different things. That part is interesting. But the very fact that the only teams that are trading up quarterbacks in the top three are interesting. You've got, you know, Vic, you've got Eli Manning, you got Robert Griffin III, and really that's it over the last decade of teams trading up. You don't see it very often. It's usually for an elite guy. So that alone will also hurt the Raiders. So there's a lot of things that are going against the Raiders to trade out of the top three picks, but there is something that I found that is going to help the Raiders, and that's the rookie salary cap, the rookie cap wage scale, whatever you want to call it, that basically made teams last year, for whatever reason, really trade a lot in the first 10 picks. Maybe because that trading up isn't such a steep financial investment as it used to be. It's only an incremental investment as far as financially speaking. So there's a lot less risk in doing so. I saw more teams do it. And, Trent Richardson was drafted at 3, and a team traded up to get him, but the team didn't trade from 15. The team traded from 4 to 3. So you also have to look at that. So really what I want to look at is who would like to trade with the Raiders and for what? What I came down to is, if a team's going to move up to 3, chances are they're going to be looking for a quarterback. That's just what it's going to be. And then you start looking, okay, what teams need a quarterback? And you can probably guess, you know, what teams need a quarterback, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't have the draft order in front of me, but there's a bunch of teams sitting in the top 10 that could use quarterbacks. I mean, there's a reason they're sitting in the top 10, because they are very good.
Exactly. And so I started looking at all these different quarterbacks, that especially with teams sitting in those draft slots. And we have the Eagles at 4, okay? And then you have the Cardinals, you have the Browns, Cardinals, and Bills that are drafting 6, 7, and 8. Those are the other teams that are definitely, and then you have the Lions, Sam Chandler, with the quarterback. So what you have there, those teams, they all need a quarterback. So provided, now, this is all hypothetical because maybe two best quarterbacks go 1-2, and this is a moot point because there's not another quarterback on the board for anybody to trade up for. But hypothetically, Geno Smith is still sitting there, or another top quarterback that somebody likes. It could be Tyler Wilson, it could be Matt Barkley. We don't really know how teams are going to value these guys. But say one of these teams really wants a quarterback. You could get the Eagles to move up one spot to make sure that no one jumps them for a quarterback. That's a possibility. But when you're talking about moving down one spot, last year, that moving down one spot was only worth, I believe it was like a fourth round pick is the earliest pick that they ended up getting. It was a fourth and fifth round pick or something like that. That's certainly picks the Raiders could use, but minor, you know, you're not picking up that second round pick that you lost from Carson Palmer. So when we're looking at all these different scenarios, what it comes down to is really, that's as far down as the Raiders can go from 3 is down to 8. Any further than that, team is having to give up basically their entire draft just to move up. And teams don't do that. Even when Washington traded for Robert Griffin III, the number 2 pick last year, they give up future first-round picks. They didn't give up their whole draft in 1 year. So the Raiders could potentially get some future picks, but generally speaking, they're not going to probably be able to trade lower than the 8th pick. And really, if you're talking about the best trade partners for the Raiders, it's the Cardinals and the Bills, which is the 2nd and 8th pick. And that's because they moved down a little bit more, and the chances are then that they would get a 2nd-round pick in return for moving down that far. And that's the 2nd-round pick that they recoup, and that's the 2nd-round pick that they could really use to rebuild this roster. So I think that's really where their sweet spot is. But then you're talking about, do Cardinals or the Bills want to move up? They want to take the risk to move up to 3? Well, those two teams haven't really been kind of teams that have traded historically, made those types of moves in the first round, taking those kind of risks. Both those people have been pretty conservative about that. So they both have a little bit of changeover as far as head coach, and so there's some things that could happen. But overall, realistically speaking, the chances that the Raiders trade in the first round is probably pretty small at this point, just because you're talking about a hypothetical that a player ends up being there that somebody wants to trade for that the Raiders don't also want. And if it's a quarterback, the Raiders not wanting that quarterback. And you also have to basically have one of 3 teams that really want that quarterback enough to move up for it. And then you also have to work out some sort of trade. So, you know, people would like to say, like a broken record, well, trade down. It's really not that simple. It's really not that easy. And a lot of things really have to go right for the Raiders to be in that situation. And yeah. The best case scenario is for the Raiders to figure out if they want a quarterback, if they want one of the quarterbacks. If they do, then it doesn't matter. If they don't, then they can kind of put in a contingency plan for, hey, if this quarterback's here at 3, or let's call around and see what we can get, and then see if they can move down. But, you know, moving down too far, they might risk losing out on one other player that they want. So, to some one of these other teams. So, you know, a lot of times these bad teams are bad for the similar reasons, and so they end up targeting kind of the same type of players. So overall, I wanted to look at that, and what I found out is the Raiders, if they to really add these players that they really need to do to turn things around quickly, they're going to have to try to do it within the framework of what they've got, and they'll be lucky if the Raiders, the Raiders will be lucky if they can, you know, move down and acquire more picks, even if that's just a fourth or fifth rounder, to move down one slot.
The team that's interesting with me is Philadelphia, because Philadelphia right now is kind of a wild card, because you have a coach with Chip Kelly, where you don't exactly know what kind of offense he wants to install. I mean, it's going to be the same basic principles, I would think, of the Oregon offense. But Michael Vick's not the quickest decision maker, and he's expensive, and he's injury prone.
Yeah, and he's gone.
I think he's probably gone. And then you don't really know how Nick Foles fits into Chip Kelly's vision for what he wants that offense to be. I think Foles can be a pretty solid quarterback, but I'm not sure he's a franchise guy, and I'm not sure, you know, if Chip Kelly wants to expand his offense on this recent trend of zone read stuff and zone option. I don't think Foles is the right, you know, guy there. The thing that's interesting, too, is that if the Eagles want to go and get Geno Smith, they could trade up with the Raiders if the Raiders don't want him. But if you really look at Geno Smith, he can run, and he's athletic, but running's not really his thing. You know, he's not a scrambling guy. He can scramble, but he'd prefer to sit in the pocket and throw. But, you know, if Chip Kelly looks at film and evaluates, you know, hey, you know what, this guy can run my offense, then maybe the Raiders and the Eagles have a conversation. But I think Philadelphia is a really interesting team because it's an absolute wild card what they're going to do because they have absolutely so many options, not to mention free agency as well.
Yeah, and we'll get a little bit of clarity. If any of these teams, you know, for example, go out and get Alex Smith, that'll kind of signify, okay, they're set a quarterback, or, you know, it's also possible that one of these teams comes out and says, hey, this guy's going to be our starter. I'm probably doubtful, but one of these teams comes out and says, hey, this guy's going to be my starter in 2013 or whatever. But a lot of different little things can happen. I think one of the things that you mentioned, though, I mean, yeah, Philadelphia, I agree, is a huge wild card in what they're going to do there. If they want Geno Smith, and they think the Raiders want Geno Smith, they might have to trade up with the Jaguars at 2 to get Geno Smith. So you might see something like that. And with the recent news that the Raiders might really like Geno Smith coming out, you may have a situation where whoever wants Geno Smith has to trade up to 2 to get him. And so there's these different little things that can happen. There's so many different wild cards, especially this year when there's really no consensus on picks. I mean, you could go 1 to 30, and you can get vastly different opinions on the top 30 prospects. Some people have really these guys that some other guys have at 30. Some guys have the best player in the draft. A lot of people have guys that, you know, other people have in their 20s in their top 5. And so there's a lot of variance, and if there's a lot of variance, you know, within the scouts that, you know, aren't working for a team, chances are that the scouts that aren't working for a team probably have a similar variance, and there's going to be a wide variance amongst teams. So there's a lot of weird things that can happen. We don't even know what the first teams are going to do with the picks. Like I said, they can both go quarterback, 1-2, and really, you know, make this a moot point. But chances are that there's going to be some opportunity for the Raiders, you know, to move out of that spot. But like I said, I still think my money is on if the quarterback is there that they like, and Geno Smith, and that's who they like, and rumored to like, my guess is if he's there at 3, the Raiders are just going to draft him at 3.
And they probably should. If they think he's a quarterback guy, if they think he's a franchise guy, they absolutely should take him.
Right, exactly. So if he's there at 3, I think the Raiders take him. And if he's not there, 3, it's a moot point about trading down. So I think ultimately when we talk about trading down, the Raiders are going to have to work with the picks that they have to try to bring in what they need and then also work free agency. And I think this year they're going to have a little bit more flexibility than last year. And I also think that the Raiders, if they think, this is the interesting thing about Carson Palmer, is that there's 2 waves of free agency before the draft and after the draft. And I think the Raiders will definitely explore some things before the draft. Obviously, they have to with as many holes as they have. But one thing that I think that they're really going to do is if they end up landing Geno Smith at number 3, they can release Palmer and they can save a lot of money. And then they can go out and, you know, stock their roster full of maybe, you know, some of these free agents that are cap casualties, quality veteran guys that might not be the best players anymore, but can get the job done, are reliable guys. And you put enough of those guys together, the hope is that, hey, one of these guys has a good year, and you get a decent performance out of them. And the Raiders will have enough, you know, firepower to do that. So I think ultimately what you end up having, if you end up releasing Palmer, is a lot more flexibility to do a lot of things. And so that's why I think if the Raiders have that opportunity to get Geno Smith and they like Geno Smith, they're just going to take him, because that creates better roster flexibility for them to address other positions with the money that they'd save on our forward. So
yeah.
Overall, you know, you gotta look at all the factors. It's not just one thing. It's not just, well, Palmer and Gino. Well, Gino's not a top prospect, and Palmer's solid, and so that's it. No, there's more to that. You gotta look at the entire view of it, and I think the Raiders might be better off if Geno Smith is there, is taking Geno Smith, releasing Palmer, and then figuring out how do we make this roster better, and going out and finding a lot of different quality players while they, for cheap, that can come in and compete while they build through the draft, because it's still going to take, building through the draft is something that's really done over the course of several years, and the Raiders haven't even gotten a first round pick until this year. Really, it starts this year. This is the starting year. So overall, it's a process, and you have to consider all the factors, and I'm sure the Raiders are doing that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the more I think about it, one idea if the Raiders are going to trade down that I think would be to trade some of their lower picks, you know, because we see teams do it all the time. On draft day, you have a guy you want, say, in the third round, wherever you're picking, and the Raiders pick early, so maybe this doesn't necessarily apply, but, you know, maybe the team picking at the start of the third round takes whoever the Raiders are targeting. They can trade down with their third round pick and, you know, maybe stockpile either a later third than like a sixth, or maybe trade that third round pick for 2/4 and a seventh. Because, you know, we've talked about it, the strength of this draft is definitely that it's a deep draft, and there will be a lot of solid players, and as we talked about the Raiders, they have a shortage of talent, and the Raiders could use a lot of different guys in a lot of different positions. And so I think if we're talking about a trade down, you know, talking about them trading down their late round picks, maybe a little more realistic.
Yeah, absolutely. I think what you end up doing by that is, you know, you bring in more players. Honestly, I think this draft, I think most of the guys that I've talked to, and most of the scouts that the scouts that we see and then know that are out there, you know, the best ones, I think, pretty much agree that the depth of the draft is through 100. There's good depth through 100. But dropping below that wouldn't be good. Well, the Raiders are going to draft, you know, at the top of the third round, they're going to be drafting, what is that, 60, you know, maybe like with the 60, I think it's a 66th or 67th pick, something like that. And they're going to be drafting there. That's a good spot where there might be several players on the board where they could drop down a little bit, get a player. They want to pick up another pick later and still get the player that they wanted in that round. Maybe it won't be. You'd be surprised. A lot of the stuff is you try to anticipate as well as possible, but a lot of it is you just have to be quick thinking and think quick on your feet. And the Raiders have to be, you know, they work the phones during the draft and say, okay, we, you know, several picks, maybe 10 picks ahead, they realize, okay, our guy's going to be there, he's still there, and then when it gets to your pick, if he's still there, you got to have a deal in place so you can move down, because you don't have a whole lot of time to make that decision unless you're there. You got to be planning ahead. Raiders will be planning ahead. This is a very big season for them, so I know that they've probably sliced and diced this every possible way that they can to anticipate what's going on.
Yeah, and I think she's having a lot of fun with your phone.
No, she's playing with my dog now.
Oh, okay.
She's pulling her tail.
Yeah, I think one of the things that was nice about McKenzie, too, is that in Green Bay he was always lauded for his scouting of late-round players. And so I think in a draft like this where the Raiders don't have a ton at the top, that'll be an asset that definitely will come into play. And so
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's funny that you should say that, because when I was doing some of the draft thing, I just happened to stumble upon, notable undrafted players from last year, and it was interesting because most of the notable undrafted players came on teams that you would expect to see them. You see them, the Packers had a couple, the Raiders had a couple, you know, McKenzie found a couple undrafted guys, maybe one, some are a little more surprising, but not necessarily if you agree with those out there that say Scott Pioli is a good talent evaluator. The Chiefs had a couple notable undrafted guys that they found, and the Eagles had a couple. And some of these teams that have been known for really drafting well and finding players in lesser-known things and not even draft picks, but undrafted guys, they all did well. And I think that goes to show you that, quality scouting, it goes beyond just drafting. It also goes to pro now, and it goes to all these other areas. And I think the Raiders, you know, they didn't have a lot of these free agents that they brought in last year work out, but it wasn't necessarily the free agents themselves as much as the injuries that went along with those players and their age. And that was a risk that they had to take because they didn't have a choice. And, you know, overall, I think McKenzie needs to have the time to turn this thing around. And same with Allen. I think it's not really fair to judge those two guys until this is a few years in the making. And last year was really just a reset year. It sucks to have to wait a whole year for that to happen, but that's really the situation the Raiders were in. And unfortunately, then the rebuild begins now, and this is going to be a big offseason. And as many of those five things that they can accomplish, the better. And I think, you know, if they can accomplish most of those things, then they have a chance of a quick turnaround.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we'll wrap up the show in a few. You know, you saw the New York Giants today cut a lot of guys. And we've been talking about it ad nauseum on our podcast, and we were doing the Spreecast earlier, that the Raiders have some guys that could very well be cap casualties. Richard Seymour will be gone. Tommy Kelly could be gone. Darius Heyward-Bey could be gone. And we've talked about Palmer, obviously. And I believe the deadline to cut a lot of those guys is at the end of the week, right?
It's not the deadline. They have to be cut before. Some of them have certain clauses in their contract.
Right, that's what it was. Because I remember it was Seymour. Seymour had to be gone by the end of the week, right?
Seymour, yeah, his contract void, so that one will happen here soon. Seymour, his contract void, so his is going to be done. He's going to be done. But as far as actually releasing these players, it has to be before the new league year starts. That's March 12th. Unless they have something in their contract. Some of these agents want to give their players as much time to consider their options as possible. So they build in these roster bonuses and other types of things into the contracts that enable them to get out of their contract. Basically, hey, they've got a roster bonus due 2 days into the league year. So the league year just started. So, you know, or 2 days into the waiver period or whatever. I'm sorry, the league year hasn't started yet, but that's what comes in March. But you know, a lot of these teams have these clauses built in. February or whatever things. So that gives their players the most amount of time. I don't know of any of those for the Raiders, as far as the Raiders goes for any of those their contracts. But definitely by the time free agency rolls around and the Raiders have to be under the cap, you're going to see some of these high, you know, priced guys go. My guess is Kelly could be cut and you bring in Brian in, so you can bring Brian back, because Brian's going to probably cost a decent amount as a free agent. And so you cut Kelly, Seymour's contract voids, DHB is going to make too much to keep him around for what he does. He's a candidate for sure to be restructured, because I think on the open market he's not going to make that much. So you could see something like a restructuring for DHB instead of being cut. But there's a lot of different scenarios that could happen. But overall, over the next month, you're going to see the Raiders, you know, take care of their cap situation and their cap guys, and then work from there. And then, like I said, with Palmer's the kind of guy where you can keep him around and kind of see what happens in the draft, and then decide with him on what's going to happen.
Absolutely, and I think we're going to go ahead and wrap it up. We're bringing these to you every week. Don't forget to subscribe to us on iTunes. We are there, so if you're listening to it, I assume through RaiderBlog.com, click the button. There's a little button below on the website where you can subscribe to iTunes, or you can go in there manually and search RaiderBlog.com podcast, and you'll find us there. Subscribe, and that way you can take us on the go with you on your iPad, on your iPhone, whatever. Anything else, Chris, before we get out of here?
I appreciate it. Thanks for tolerating my daughter this week, and maybe next week she'll start talking all of a sudden, because she's not talking yet, and then she'll probably start repeating stuff that I said about the Raiders all the time, which probably isn't all good stuff. So
it's a good thing she's hearing this early. Then when she's like 5 or 6, we'll be able to actually have her on the show and we can discuss things.
Yeah, it will be quite interesting when she's doing Raiders analysis, and I'm sure it won't take her long to catch on.
All right, take it easy, Chris. I'll talk to you next week.
Okay, thanks.